moment. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the landmark episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, the definitive episode, the collector's edition. This is it. If you just decided that you're going to start listening to this podcast, oh boy, this was the episode to get in on. Because it's the landmark episode, the best episode. I'm calling it now, guys.
Oh, my.
No episode is going to top this one. Because we've got some great topics. We've got football to talk about, a variety of football topics from a variety of different footballs. Association football, and of course, the Buffalo Bills. Week 12? Yeah, week 12 win. Over the Denver Broncos. It was a goodie. So we're going to talk about all that. And today, I'm joined by a couple guys to talk about these wonderful topics. First, it's joining for the, again, landmark 100th episode. It's Rich Kowalski. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, Bills are one step closer to the playoffs, and my other football team, Tottenham Hotspur, had a roller coaster week that we'll get into a little bit later, but it's a crazy week.
Also here, on this landmark 150th episode, it's McKenna Middlebrook. McKenna, how does it feel to have been here for 150 weeks?
Well, you know, I've aged so much. I've grown as a person. I've had kids. I got married. Got divorced.
Yep.
I've lived a life in this podcast. I mix up Motor City and Music City. It happens, you know. But it's good to be here for number 150. Can't wait to be here for 250. You know.
Which is next week, the 250th episode. It's so nice to stutter consistently and to also be joined here each and every week by our wonderful listeners. This is the biggest podcast in the world, and you guys have really helped make this the landmark episode of this podcast. So,
I thought you were going to say we had special guest Jose Mourinho and Martino.
We have.
You know, with us.
Yeah, you did my transition for me. Joining us today, it is special guest Jose Mourinho. He is taking Rich's spot in Premier Rich. Jose, what's going on? What's been going on in your life recently?
I love football, and I've been wanting to rekindle this love for football for a long time now, and I'm happy to be at Tottenham. They are a big club, a good club. Yeah.
So for the I'm gonna guess there's like three people who probably understand what's going on here, but I'll just run it.
That's a high number.
I'll run it down for the others who don't understand. Rich's club, Tottenham Hotspur, since last week have fired their former manager. How did you pronounce his name?
Mauricio Pochettino.
Mauricio Pochettino.
He's from Argentina.
The land of Messi and Las Pampas and steak. So I took a whole class on the history of Argentina, and that's the only thing I could tell you about Argentina.
Oh boy.
Diego Maradona. He's from Argentina.
Yeah.
No clue what that
Maradona
means.
He's a legendary.
No, he does
drunk.
A lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
I know there was there was a chef who wrote cookbooks from Argentina. It was a female. Ooh. And that's your Argentina lesson of the day. Tune in next week for more Argentina lessons.
That's deep.
So yeah, since the last time we recorded a podcast, Tottenham Hotspur parted ways with their former manager and hired Jose Mourinho. Jose Mourinho, a bit of a controversial figure in the world of soccer, and more specifically English soccer or English football. He's been with a bunch of different clubs and has had successful stints, but they always seem to end on bad terms. So Tottenham making a big switch to bring in Jose Mourinho. So Rich, as a diehard Tottenham fan, to see your team part ways with their former manager and bring in a figure like Mourinho, how does that make you feel?
I felt pretty gutted at first. You know, it's like a roller coaster. Last May or June, Spurs were in the Champions League final with their prior coach, and then, you know, they lose that, and months later they end up sacking him. So it's a crazy, tumultuous ride. I mean, Mauricio Pochettino is like such a well-respected coach in the Premier League, and then you know, you bring in a guy that's a big headline guy, a big personality, and you change it up, and it tends to get a little scary when that happens. But I mean, the way I see Jose Mourinho is a very experienced coach. He's won two Champions League titles, and he's bounced around the Premier League in most recent years. But he just has an insane pedigree. And if you can kind of find a comparison between him and the NFL, I guess you could say maybe like a much younger Bill Parcells, with the mouth of Rex Ryan, kind of.
Yeah, that's not
like
bad.
Winning, but also brings a lot of attention with him. But apparently he's a changed man, so, take that for what you want. But, Spurs won, though, on Saturday.
I don't want to talk about that.
They beat Kyle's favorite team, West Ham, the Hammers, who apparently might be their coach Pellegrini might be on the hot seat now and might be canned as well.
Good. Good. But, we're not going to talk about West Ham this week. West Ham is the team I support, but I don't think we've ever had an in-depth conversation about West Ham just because there's nothing to talk about.
There's not much. They usually just blow a game. Like, 2 weeks in a row, they were down 3-0 and came back to score two goals. But both games were just out of reach.
They're a great club, and they're a big club. They play in London Stadium.
They're three points from relegation right now.
Things you love to see.
Yeah.
But someone who is very familiar with Jose Mourinho, because he managed his favorite club, McKenna, just as somebody who has dealt with the highs and lows of Mourinho, do you have anything to warn Rich about here?
So...
It's like you're getting in a relationship with his ex.
Warm milk with his coffee.
Exactly. So I remember the day Jose Mourinho announced for Manchester United. I was like, sick. The treble's back on. We're winning everything. It's going to be great. And then you realize that his tactics are very out of date, and he's very defensive about it. So you say Mourinho has said he's a changed man, and he looks a lot happier now than he did at the end of Manchester.
I mean, anyone could look happier than they are when they're at Man U.
Not wrong. can't even. he is going to fight with director of football, Dan Levy, for Spurs, because Mourinho likes having, a lot of money to spend, because he's at the point in his career where he's like, I deserve a lot of money because I've won everything. Which is rightfully, he can say that because he is a very talented manager. But he's going to get in a lot of fights with Daniel Levy because he's known for being a penny pincher and not giving out a big transfer budget. You'll win a trophy with Mourinho.
Oh, thank goodness.
You will. He won two at Manchester United. He won the Europa League and maybe
the League Cup too.
Yeah, the Carabao League, whatever.
Carabao Cup.
The Carabao Cup. So you'll win trophies, but at times he'll sit five at the back when you're playing a team like West Ham. That happened with Manchester United. It was home against West Ham, five at the back, and you're gonna tear your hair out. And other times you'll be like, oh wow, we're winning trophies and we're beating teams 2-3-0. So yeah, it'll be a good first year. Second year he'll be mixed. Third year he'll be gone. That's the way it goes with Mourinho now.
Yeah, that's what it does seem like. But hey, I mean, they win a trophy.
A good year. You could win the Champions League this year because he knows how to win it. And Tottenham the Spurs have a good team still. Like the team pretty much remains the same, and they added Ndombele.
Ndombele, yeah.
Who's a very talented player. Yeah. So
added Lo Celso too, experienced guy.
Yeah. So. I would if the Spurs wanted to win the Champions League, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. But
well, it's an exciting time to be at least watching from afar what's going on at Tottenham. It's a lot better than what's going on at Arsenal. They are just the North London rival and Unai Emery, right? Yep. Good evening.
Unai Emery.
Yeah, just awful.
He talks like that.
He does.
Who'd they draw against this week?
They drew against Southampton, who's currently sitting in relegation. They're second from the bottom. 9-0. They have 9 points total out of 13 matches. 9 points.
Yikes.
That's Yeah.
Well, they're owned by Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Rams, so he's
Southampton as well? Oh, Arsenal. Or yes. Arsenal, yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah. Well, who owns... Imagine. There's some Chinese group that owns Southampton, yeah. And that's where the Sabres poach their hockey coach from, so that tells you a little bit about what's going on with the Sabres. Arsenal, Stan Kroenke owns them, or I don't know how to pronounce
the Rams
that
last
name.
Yeah.
We'll say Kronk.
He also owns the Colorado Rapids in the MLS.
The Rapids, the Avalanche, the Nuggets. So he's more focused on what's going on over here. I doubt he really cares about what's going on at Arsenal, which is why they can just continue to coast to mediocrity. So that's a lot of fun. So we will... I think that sums up our Premier League discussion here this week. Unless, McKenna, you quickly want to go over your team's exciting result against Sheffield United.
Yeah, he's thrilled too.
I honestly, it was I was watching the game. Started at 11:30 kickoff, which is a little annoying because the Bills started 1, so there's going to be crossover.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I was watching it. United went down 2-0, and I was like, "This is great. I just want all of these players. They can leave. They're all terrible. Sell them all." And then right as the Bills game started, Brandon Williams, a 19-year-old, scored, and I was like, "Oh, come on, stop this! I do not want to like, pay half my attention to United and the Bills." And then United went on to go up 3-2 in I think 10 minutes, and then in the 90th minute, Sheffield United got the equalizer. And it was a wild match to watch because United was terrible throughout all of it, except for 15 minutes. And I think it's time for the United's manager to leave, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Ooh.
I think he needs to leave. I think I would honestly love to see Mauricio Pochettino come to United.
Oh,
I thought he was going to Bayern. I thought that was the rumor.
I think that's the main landing spot right now is Bayern Munich in Germany and going there, but. Who knows? I mean, he might want to stay in the Premier League. There were rumors even before, which would just gut me if he went to Arsenal, too.
Ooh, I don't think that's he will. He likes,
I don't
he
think
Spurs.
He would either, but that's some people think that's possible. That
would
he
could be
go
hilarious.
Over to Tottenham's rival and troll them from afar.
Yeah. That would be from hilarious.
A close, that would actually, be
from a stone's throw where
those
people invaded North London, where Tottenham are. Sorry.
Sheffield United, if I remember correctly, aren't they higher than Tottenham on the table?
Yeah. They are currently, by
okay,
one point.
Fun.
So that just shows you, I mean, from Wolves, so Wolverhampton Wolves in fifth, they have 19 points, right? And they're in fifth. In 14th, Newcastle has 15. So only 4 points behind them, there's a team in 14th. It's just very tight from fifth to 14th and 15th right now. It's so close.
Yeah.
So like during the match on Saturday, Spurs, after they had won, they were temporarily in like 5th place or 6th place. And then, all the other games happened, all the other matches happened, and they dropped to 10th. So it's just very tight. And then Liverpool's just running away with it.
Yeah, which is sad.
And
hate to see it.
It's I don't mind it.
I
don't mind seeing not Man City in there.
It's just I mean, if Leicester can pull out the shocker and win the Premier League again, I'd love it.
That'd
be so much fun.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty crazy.
It's
possible.
It's not going to happen, but it'd be fun.
They have more points. Leicester this year has more points through 13 games than they did the year they won the Premier League.
Well, I suppose anything's possible. I just don't think it's possible.
Liverpool's a ton of matches coming up, too, where they're going to have guys resting, and they're going to have a lot of people playing on tired legs in, like, 2 games a week. They have so much coming up, and it's because they continue to win. So they have these other tournaments going. Like, they have the World Cup of – it's like the FIFA World Cup they have coming up, too. They have to play that and then within 24 hours play another match. So it's not good.
Not good for them.
Great planning on the on behalf of whoever does the planning.
On behalf of player safety.
Yeah, on behalf of the NFLPA. So we are we're 15 minutes into this podcast, all soccer talk thus far. I'm sure everyone has you know, tuned off, jumped off the bandwagon here of the landmark episode. So we'll transition into a little bit of Buffalo football talk. And by Buffalo football, I mean the USL team that might be coming here. Bam.
We're all
swerve,
putting Bills wire.
Got
we're joining USL Buffalo wire.
USL Buffalo wire coming soon. So if you
love
heard
it.
About this, have you heard about this? This
things
news?
You love to see.
Things you love to see. So last week it was, I think this news came out the morning that our podcast came out, so we had to wait a week to talk about this news. So last week it was announced that the USL has awarded a conditional franchise to Connecticut-based developer John McClutchie and Buffalo-based developer Dennis Penman. The USL has awarded them a conditional franchise for Buffalo, presumably to start in the 2023 season, and that the conditional aspect of it is if they can construct a 10,000 seat soccer specific stadium somewhere in Buffalo.
So they're not getting a stadium. They're not getting a team then.
They're not getting a team. But no, there have been, I think the Buffalo News reported that they've looked at four sites in or around downtown Buffalo. And also, I don't know where I read this, but I think I read that the developers would like to make like a mixed use sports anchored area, meaning like, it, obviously not on the level of the Battery in Atlanta, but something like that, where it's kind of a region where you can go to, not specifically to watch soccer, but soccer will be there. So it's a bit interesting because Buffalo has an amateur football team, FC Buffalo, but it's in the NPSL. There is not a lot of fan support for that league in general, and there's not really. I think they average like 700 to 800 people a game, which is decent, but also when you're asking a city to build a 10,000 seat stadium and your evidence of soccer support in the city is less than 1,000 people per game.
They just showed them the photo of the World Cup at the waterfront. That's we have support. Here's all these people watching it on the screen.
That's very true. But I don't know if it's going to happen, but it could, because a 10,000-seat stadium doesn't take up a lot of space. It really wouldn't take up a lot of space whatsoever. That could take up, like, a city block. And I really don't foresee that being an issue that would interfere with a potential Bills stadium. Mayor Byron Brown came out and said that he thinks Buffalo could, the city of Buffalo could, support two stadiums downtown, which is really funny that they don't even have one. And you're like, I think we could put two here. But I do think the Bills stadium would probably go by the waterfront and the USL stadium would go elsewhere in the city. So I think realistically it could happen. And I do think Buffalo would support a USL team. I think Buffalo, we've seen, it's a sports. I'm about to have a stroke. It's a sports crazy town. The Bills fans, Buffalo Bills fans are almost like a soccer fan base in terms of their just loyalty and rabidness and just, you know, each and every tailgate. They're just crazy about their team. It's not similar to a soccer franchise, but in terms of their willingness to literally die in some cases for their team, that's similar to a soccer fan base. So if they could kind of tap into that and find some of that loyalty for their team, I do think Buffalo would support a soccer team if they're able to capture the imagination of the city. And also, soccer is kind of the millennial sport. Soccer is the Zoomer or the millennial sport, and Buffalo, there's statistics. I think it's one of the top 10 cities in the United States for millennials moving here. So I'll go to you, Rich. As somebody who loves soccer and used to live in Buffalo, do you think Buffalo would support a USL team should the USL eventually come here?
I think so. I mean, if you think about Bills fans, you're talking about comparing it with, you know, the atmosphere. Bills fans love standing up and cheering the shout song. They love doing the Seven Nation Army. You get to do that the whole game watching a soccer match. So it's not much difference there. I mean, and also we did see back in the last World Cup, Buffalo support for, I mean, when the USA was in the last World Cup, however long ago that was.
2014?
6 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, 2014.
I mean, you saw the massive support that Buffalo gave out going to the waterfront and having those, you know, all the people there. I joked about it earlier, but I mean, there was a lot of support. And I mean, I think if Buffalo got something with more of a profile than, you know, whatever league they you know, FC Buffalo was in before. I don't even know the name of the league. But the
National USL... Premier Soccer League.
Exactly. Oh. It's so they were in the Premier League, but close. But so I mean, if they got a much, you know, bigger profile, those, you know, being in the USL does sometimes and has led in the past to other teams joining the MLS in the future. So when I was living in St. Petersburg, we had a USL team. We had the Tampa Bay Rowdies, and they still have them, I believe. But they had it in a former baseball stadium. They kind of converted more towards soccer. But, I mean, the crowd was still pretty full there. And, I mean, if Buffalo could do something similar, I think there's no... You know, it's not impossible for them to eventually have that lead to an MLS team if they show that much support and within the community.
Yeah, and I do want to just further explain what the USL is, because I didn't really do a good job with that before. So the USL is recognized as the second tier of American soccer by the FA of America, whatever it's called. I don't know. But it's recognized as the second tier, and recently they established a three-tier system of the second tier. It's confusing. There's the USL Championship, which is the highest second tier, USL League One, which is the second highest second tier, and then USL League Two. And I think they pretty much decide who's in what league based off market size, because there's no promotion relegation, at least not yet. So this potential team that would be coming to Buffalo would be a USL Championship team. So this would be... Buffalo's prospective team would be in the second highest recognized division of American soccer. And that's an interesting point you bring up about MLS, because you see cities nowadays getting USL teams with the idea of showing that their city can support a team and love soccer, with the ultimate goal of getting into MLS. You look at Sacramento, that's what they've done this whole time through. Cincinnati, Nashville, St. Louis. There's these cities that get USL teams with the goal of showing they can support and then eventually move up into MLS through the purchase of an expansion franchise. Mm-hmm. At MLS, their ultimate goal is to get to 30 teams. I think they're at 29 right now. So I'm sure they'll announce their 30th team before Buffalo even gets a USL team. So we'll see what happens there. But I do think Buffalo would support a USL team. As you said, Rich, it's... The fans kind of act like soccer fans with the singing of the shout song, Seven Nation Army. And like you said, they do that through the whole game. And beers will be cheaper than they are at the stadium, at the Bill Stadium. So that'll be fun. Get them drunk and get them singing. There'll be fights. There'll be riots. It'll be a ton of fun here in downtown Buffalo whenever this happens. So McKenna, as someone who is a soccer fan, same transition I used for Rich. Perfect. As someone who is a soccer fan, would you support a, even though you don't live in the Buffalo area, would you become a supporter of a Buffalo-based USL team?
Yeah, I would. I think first of all, it's unfortunate that the MLS and USL don't have like the relegation system, because I think relegation and promotion help like every European league. It makes every game like important, and every like league important, because you might have, you know, like a championship team like Sheffield United in the Premier League this season who are just killing it, and the Wolves last year did the same thing coming up from the championship. So I think if the USL and the MLS can figure out a promotion relegation system, that would be sick. And yeah, I would definitely I'd promote it. I'd watch it. I'd support. I'd promote. You know, I'd use my social support to promote the team.
Yeah, I'm a social media influencer. I'd show my support.
Yeah, I would watch them. I'd support them. I'd, like, you know, buy the jerseys and the scarves, because as much as, like, it's kind of fun for Buffalo to be a one-sport city, you know, having the Bills, like, makes the Bills fan base more, like, fervent for the Bills. But having, like, a smaller-ish sort of team... I think you'd have like a really passionate fan base that like ride and die.
Intimate connection.
Yeah, ride or die with the city, yeah, with the team. So yeah, I'd love to see it. And I would, whenever I'm closer to home, which is fairly close to Buffalo, I'd go to games, you know, because it'd be fun. Tickets would probably be cheap, you know, beer would be cheap, and it would just be a good time just to go down to Buffalo and watch some sports. So yeah, I'd love that. But will it happen? Who knows? Get the Pagulas involved. They might make it happen.
You just indirectly threw so much shade at the Sabres by saying Buffalo's a one-sport city.
I mean,
much shade.
Yeah, I literally forgot about the Sabres.
No, everyone has. after that start, I mean, they just suck now. They're playing a defenseman as their fourth-line right winger.
I have no idea what that means.
I'm not going to get into it. Just watch the Sabres if you want to see a shit show. I'm good.
I watched it. It's fine.
So I don't think there's even a question of would Buffalo support a team, because as we've seen, Buffalo supports sports. When Buffalo forms a connection with a team, it's harder to find a more loyal group of supporters. So I think if the team is able to form a connection with the city and build a nice stadium that fans are proud to go to, or a region that fans are proud to go to, and so, you know, just are happy to support the team with cheap beer, I do think Buffalo would really support a team. But also, though, like I said earlier, a 10,000-seat stadium is not a big ask because it really wouldn't take up a large area. And if it's privately funded, also, that wouldn't really be a burden on the taxpayers. So that's not hard to fathom, a 10,000-seat stadium. But also, I just really don't trust this city to do anything. I don't trust this city. Especially, and people here. Just, I remember a few months ago, Encore Golf, which is like a golf technology company downtown based near the Bison Stadium. They announced that they're making an Encore Golf facility on the same peninsula thing as Riverworks, which is like a party event center downtown. And they announced that they're building this huge facility. It's like a Topgolf hotel, just a Topgolf hotel mixture, just a bunch of really cool things in one facility, which would be insane. It would just really attract tourists here, golf lovers, and there's a huge golf-loving population in Buffalo. So combine that with people coming in from out of town to see this thing, or people coming in for a Bills game or whatever event's happening downtown, and they just shoot over to Topgolf or Encore Golf, sorry, and stay at that hotel. It would really be good for the economy, in my opinion. It would attract people here, etc. It'd be good. And I saw an op-ed in the Buffalo News saying, don't disrupt the historic grain elevators that are there because, don't disrupt that. People like to go and look at them. So don't do this thing that would benefit the economy as a whole because people like to look at the grain elevators. Mm. It's like, come on!
You've looked at them for years.
Yeah. You've looked at them for years.
Not changing.
Who gives a crap about grain elevators?
You want us to go stare at concrete, go out to your driveway and just look at the ground.
They're not in use anymore. It's just, it's cool. They put Labatt stickers on some grain elevators, keep them there. But I don't understand why, when this thing would so obviously bring eyes to Buffalo, bring people to Buffalo, and you got people saying, I'd rather look at the grain elevators and the empty fields. Haha. It's like, get out of here. So if the city builds that, maybe they'll be open to building a soccer stadium downtown. But anything to add here on this potential USL team before we get into what people clicked on this podcast for?
Nah, let's get into the Bills.
The Buffalo Bills. Oh, boy. Sorry. I just checked my Twitter. We have the questions rolling in. Mm. Not from actual, you know, just people who listen to the show. It's all from people who have connections with either me or Bills Wire in general. So we got some good questions here. So we'll get to those at the end of this show. But first, we have to talk about the Buffalo Bills 20-3 win over the Denver Broncos. We're not going to do takeaways this week because, as we talked about before the show, I think our takeaways would all pretty much be the same. It would all be, like you said, Rich, defense is good, Josh Allen is fine, etc. So we're just going to have a general conversation about the game. And I think in general, I like, I use general back-to-back sentences, good. I do prefer when we just have general discussions about the games as opposed to takeaways, because we can just let the conversation flow. We can go wherever we want. So first, I'd like to talk about the defense. I thought this defense played lights out. They allowed only 134 net yards. They limited Philip Lindsay for the most part, only 57 yards, and that is a former Pro Bowl running back. A young former Pro Bowl running back who they limited to 57 yards on the ground in a rushing-based attack. Brandon Allen went 10 of 25 for 82 yards. That's not very good. I'm no stats major. I'm no watch-the-film analytics PFF guy, but 10 of 25 is not very good. But also, this was the type of game where if they didn't shut down the Broncos offense, I would have been more concerned. Because it was very evident from the first snap until the final kneel down what the Broncos were going to do on offense. They were going to feed Phillip Lindsay or Royce Freeman, and they weren't going to let Brandon Allen throw the ball unless they absolutely had to. It was very evident that they did not trust their third-string quarterback in that wind yesterday to make big plays. So they were just going to feed Phillip Lindsay, and then when Brandon Allen had to make a throw, they let him throw. But also, the Bills sniffed that out, which they should have. You know when they're going to run, and you know when they're going to pass, because you can kind of, if you've watched football at all, and in this case, I'm going to say the Bills coaches have watched football for the majority of their lives, they know when a team has to pass. So they knew when to defend a pass. So, again, like I said, this is the type of game where I would have been more concerned had they not shut down the Broncos offense with a third-string quarterback and really a lack of weapons. I like Cortland Sutton. I like Deshaun Hamilton. But I think that's kind of where their offense starts and stops, with Phillip Lindsay and those two. And Brandon Allen's just not a very good quarterback, as we saw. So, like I said three times now, this is a game that the Bills defense should have shut down the Broncos offense. And I would have been more concerned if they hadn't than I would be impressed if they did. So though the defense had a very good game, I'm not like, oh, blown away by it. Though they had a very good game, they played very well, I'm not blown away by the performance because I expected it. So McKenna, any takeaways, or not takeaways, we're not doing takeaways, any general discussion points about this Bills defensive performance?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing you could knock the Bills defense on was that they didn't force like enough turnovers, because a few of them fell like right into their hands, especially in the secondary. Like the third and fourth quarter, I think the Bills secondary had like three drops or something. So if that's like your biggest complaint about a defense, is that they dropped a couple easy interceptions while, you know, they just completely shut down an offense, like they obviously had a very good day. And it builds confidence, you know, going into this week, against Dallas. Like, they have I'm torn on Dallas. I just still don't know if they're good or not. but it builds confidence, like, playing two poor teams in a row. Like, the Dolphins, I'm sorry, are not very good. And
they're not.
The Broncos aren't very good either. So, just, like, I feel like they have a lot of confidence right now, which is very good going up when they're going to be going up against Ezekiel Elliott, who is one of the best running backs in the NFL, if not the best running back in the NFL. And before I stop, Matt Milano, Tremaine Edmonds, great games. They were just all over the field. It was great to watch.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that Matt Milano may be the most underrated linebacker in the NFL. Yeah. We've known for years that his game is just being around the ball. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's been able, in his third year now, to keep that up, I mean, he is literally always around the ball. Probably should have been in Pro Bowl conversations last year because he really stood out on that defense, but then he got hurt. And this year, he's not really in Pro Bowl discussions just because you have guys like Tremaine Edmonds, Trey White, Jordan Phillips. You have guys making bigger names for themselves this year who are going to get the Pro Bowl recognition there. If any Bills go to the Pro Bowl this year, we'll see. But yeah, Matt Milano's just insane, always around the ball, seemingly always coming up with big plays. And let me see how many tackles he had last week.
I think he had just 12 total.
He had, let me see, Buffalo Bills. This says six.
Six? Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Who knows? I don't. just need some numbers to back up my analysis there. Always around the ball, great in coverage, really good against the run.
He should have
very
had
short tackles
as well.
Like, he should have.
But he's a linebacker, so...
You know, he's always around the ball. He's just an insane athlete. And it's just... With him and Tremaine Edmonds headlining that linebacker core, it's just going to be a very good few years here for the Bills if they're able to keep those guys signed. Which, I'm not going to get into the discussion about should the Bills just let players walk. Never mind, we're not going to do that. Because that'd be a rant, and I don't want to do that. So, yeah. Trey White had a very good game on Cortland Sutton, who I said earlier, one of their better defenders, or one of their better offensive players in Denver. Trey White shut him down. Cortland Sutton was targeted 8 times. Trey White only let up 1 reception. Trey White is insane. This coming, 2 weeks after he shut down, put the clamps on Odell Beckham. Last week, kind of a little exposed by Devontae Parker, a little bit. He didn't have a great game this week. Rebounded, came up with an interception against Courtland Sutton. Granted, that was a very errant pass by Brandon Allen, but hey, they all count the same. They all count as an interception. So Trey White putting the clamps on Courtland Sutton, elite game. Levi Wallace not so much, but is it time to just say sorry, Levi? But Kevin Johnson's the better option at this point. What do you think, Rich?
I think it might be, honestly. I know Levi Wallace, we've touted him so much on here, but I mean, it might be we've seen, you know, his full potential in the NFL, and I think once you've seen that, it is time to start moving in a different direction. You've seen the Bills come out with more Kevin Johnson looks and bringing in Taron Johnson as a nickel a lot, but just to give that extra protection, but it might be time for Kevin Johnson to really take over that role, because he is that veteran. And the Bills right now, these games, they're coming against pretty good quarterbacks, where you have, you know, Dak Prescott, who's almost in the MVP conversation. You have Tom Brady coming up. You have Lamar Jackson coming up, where these good quarterbacks. And I think it is maybe would be in the best interest of the Bills to start Kevin Johnson over Levi Wallace. Just to add to Trey White, too, he also had 3 pass breakups yesterday, too, which is fantastic. When I mean, you're locking down their pass game and really making it difficult for them to move the ball at all, and you saw that by the point total. They had 3. I mean, they didn't really have one chance at the end zone, which is that's all you can ask for from your defense, is just an insane performance like that, and the offense just has to take care of business. And that's what the Bills did today, or on Sunday. Just in general, they took care of business. Trey White now is 4 on the year, too, which is ties his highest in his career, which was 2017. Just amazing, though. I mean, speaking of the passing game, I mean, they held the Broncos to 49 net yards passing. That's the lowest since 2005.
It's not good for the Broncos.
No. But, I mean, also, you had guys like Oliver and Shaq Lawson and Latulele stepping up.
Oh, Shaq
up
Lawson.
For 2 straight games. I mean, these are guys that had sacks. All 3 of those guys, Latulele, Lawson, and Oliver, have had sacks in back-to-back games now. That's
wild.
I mean, these are 3 guys where, I mean, Oliver is a rookie where you weren't sure what to get from him. He wasn't really performing very well. Shaq Lawson, you're almost like, well, maybe it's time to move on. Now he's making you have second thoughts about that. And Latulele, a guy that was kind of quiet and making an impact but not really on the stat sheet. Now he's, you know, back-to-back games with a sack. Granted, it's against a very poor, injured offensive line of the Dolphins and a pretty poor offensive line of the Broncos. But there's still sacks, and, you know, these guys are still in the right spot making pursuit. You could say, you know, Shaq Lawson's, no one blocked him, but
They
count just the same. That's all that matters. I mean, you're in the right position and you're making the right, you know, the right tackle. It's easy for a quarterback nowadays to really just spin out of a sack and for them to just get smothered and not even get a chance. It's still a great job by Shaq Lawson.
Ed Oliver had a big boy game. I think he had his first big boy sack. He's been getting sacks for a week, but he's been saying like, those aren't really sacks.
He had a big boy penalty too, didn't he?
He did have a big boy penalty. It was a personal foul or whatever, roughing the passer. I don't know.
I didn't see it when I was watching the game. Was it a clear one, or was it sort of?
I now remember what happened. So I think there was like a pass over the middle, or was a handoff. I don't remember. But I think Tremaine Edmonds came up with a tackle. He had got the guy to the ground, and then Ed came in last second and just drilled into the guy who was already on the ground.
Yeah, he was already pretty much done, and Ed Oliver came in and went high on the guy. And
okay. Yeah, it's like he didn't have to do that, so that was a big boy penalty. But also, he had a corkscrew sack on the 1 yard line, so maybe it shouldn't have been a safety. I'm not going to start that discussion. So
the ball was forward progress, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think he was looking for the safety. I think that's what he was trying to do, like trying to spin him back. But it was
he had a good game.
Yeah,
Shaq Lawson had a great game. 2 sacks. That was a good one.
I thought I had muted it before.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna edit that part out, but just so you guys, beautiful. Just so the listeners at home know, Rich coughed. It was funny.
What a tickle.
Shaq Lawson, big boy game, 2 sacks. Like you said, Rich, I think this comes 1 week after having another sack. So he's just been turning it on as of late. Just been really good in a contract year. And also, we saw after the game, he went up to a Denver Broncos offensive lineman. And just to, I'm not going to say the swear words that he said, just because this is a family-friendly podcast.
Family podcast.
Yeah. He was just essentially corner. Like, you said you didn't know my name, now you know my name, F you, etc. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah. And also, I'll let you continue in a second here, Rich. I'm sorry. But I understand the process. I understand wanting team first guys, whatever. But also, if I could have a team of 53 Shaq Lawsons, I'd have a team of 53 Shaq Lawsons. Shaq Lawson is just so much fun. Just play-wise, now he can back up his big mouth. Or not his big mouth, but just, you know, his...
It's a pretty big mouth.
His willingness to talk and trash talk and... you know, now his mouth is writing checks that his play can cash. So that's it's a lot of fun to see Shaq Lawson putting this all together. And whether they should re-sign him or not is going to be a big conversation this offseason. So that'll be fun. So Rich, what were you gonna say?
No, I just found it funny that, you know, after the game he went over and was talking smack to the Broncos offensive lineman, but no one blocked him on those plays where he had the sacks. So who is he? Is he going to talk smack to a ghost? I mean, there was literally no one blocking him on both of those sacks. And he's acting as if he did a great move on that lineman. I mean, it's funny. I mean, and I love the intensity, but you just maybe just take what you got and go to the locker room instead.
I love Shaq Lawson. He's just, if we don't have anything to add on the defense, if we've done our conversation here, I do want to say a quick Shaq Lawson story. Anything else to add on the defense here before we...
No.
All right, so here's my Shaq Lawson story. So it was last year, like toward the end of last year. It was a Friday, and this was still when they did press conferences on Friday. I don't think they do Friday press conferences anymore. I think they just let McDermott talk in the field house. But anyway, so it was a Friday press conference, which I kid you not, sometimes were no longer than a minute. McDermott got in and out on Fridays just because, I mean, we had a full week of media availability to that point, so nobody really had any questions on Friday. So it was a Friday. I had to write bills today, and there was, like, nothing in this press conference besides Sean McDermott saying how Shaq Lawson had matured and how he had taken a leadership role on the defense. So I was like, okay, I'll make something of that, even though it's literally one quote, one sentence. I'll try to make something of that. I'll talk to Shaq in the locker room. I'll get something out of that. So we go into the locker room. I try to find Shaq Lawson. He is walking around the locker room, nothing but underwear on. Underwear halfway down his butt, so his butt crack is out, just walking around the locker room screaming. And I was like, out of good faith, I cannot ask this man to talk about how he's matured and has taken a leadership role on this team while his underwear are halfway down his ass. I just can't do it. So I didn't make anything out of that Bills Today note. I didn't end up writing it, but it was funny. Shaq Lawson, good locker room guy. Real good locker room guy.
Very mature. likes to
talk. That was last year. Maybe he's changed a little bit. So, Shaq Lawson, fun guy, good player. So, I think it's time to transition to the offense here. The offense had a good day, I'll say. A good day. Particularly on the ground. 244 rushing yards. That made up more than half of their 424 net yards on the day. Devin Singletary led the way. 21 rushes, 106 yards. Did someone say workhorse? No, nobody said workhorse. Mm. Oh, sorry. But no, that's been the thing about Devin Singletary this whole year is we don't know if he can be a workhorse back. And this wasn't really a workhorse type of day, but because Frank Gore did get 15 rushes for 65 yards, Josh Allen rushed for 56 yards on 9 attempts. But this was the closest to a workhorse day we've seen from Devin Singletary this year. He got 21 touches on the ground, 22 total, but 106 yards. That is his first 100 rushing yard day of his career. That is a very good day. And again, none of those rushes came off of big gains or like one play, 20 to 30 yards on one play. They were all very methodical rushes, patient, where he got the ball, found a hole, and just picked up 5 to 6. And that paid off as he rushed for over 100 yards on the day with no real big plays. So I thought this was a very good game from Devin Singletary. Again, not a workhorse. I wouldn't say it was a workhorse game, but it was pretty close. Frank Gore became the NFL's third all-time leading rusher with a good day, 65 yards. Josh Allen, for the most part, played well. He had a few errant passes, especially the interception. That was just awful. I don't know if the wind took it. I don't know if it came out of his hand poorly, but it was just, that was like a Nate Peterman interception against Baltimore last year. That just flew to the into the hands of the defender, no Bill around him. It was like, what are you doing here, Josh? But also had a few good throws, like the John Brown touchdown. Finally hit him on a deep ball. Had a few really good passes to Cole Beasley. Cole Beasley had a big day. Team's leading receiver, 6 receptions, 76 yards. Offensive line as a whole, I think, played well. You know, Mitch Morris got hurt, but for the most part, I think it was a decent day from the offensive line. So I'll go to you, McKenna. Anything to add on the offense here? Just general conversation points?
Yeah, I think they did. They did what they needed to do. The Denver secondary, like, this whole Denver team is, like, the media all throughout the week were like, oh, they're better than the record. They're better than the record. And it's really more that their defense is better than their record. Because their defense is very good, and that's why the Bills were just like, we're just going to run the ball as much as we can. I think, how many rushes they have? Like, well over 30 with just the running backs, and then there's a couple with design Josh Allen runs. So, you know, the offense did what they needed to do, and I'm surprised how effective Singletary was on the ground because of how good the Broncos' defense is. And when Josh Allen needed to make the plays, he made the plays. He was very elusive in the pocket. They had the one highlight that Nick tweeted that got a lot of people riled up. It wasn't like the last Miami game where it was just there pouring it on. But, you know, did what they need to do, got the victory, which is at this point what you sort of expect from the Bills.
Yeah, I think I was a little too lenient on the offensive line. I think they had a good day. They really got the ground game going. The Bills won that game because they got going on the ground with Devin Singletary and Frank Gore. It was just the guys did work up front. They limited that very talented Denver front seven with Von Miller and Bradley Chubb. Alexander Johnson, the linebacker, he was all over the place yesterday. I had no idea who he was before the game, but he was all over the place. So, I think they did a very good job limiting that front seven. They exposed the secondary at times. So I think it was a good game offensively. Rich, what do you think?
No, I think I agree with you guys. I mean, the offensive line, I think, was a little bit of an underrated performance. I think that they really held their own against, like you said, guys like Bradley Chubb and Von Miller. And Cody Ford and Deion Dawkins did a fantastic job. And I know Von Miller, after the game, said, you know, you can credit them for doing such a good job. I mean, those guys did well. And then just going into Josh Allen, I mean, this is now his 7th game in a row with producing 2 touchdowns, which is the longest streak in the NFL. I mean, who would have thought going into the season Josh Allen would own the longest touchdown streak, you know, 2 touchdown game streak in the NFL? That's just absurd. He also went over 1,000 yards for his career in that game, too, with the 56. And it's just kind of incredible. I mean, that play in the end zone, or well, not in the end zone, by the goal line, where he just made the entire Broncos defense miss and ran for a first down. It just shows you just the raw talent and why the Bills kind of really wanted him, is to, you know, take that talent, mold it, polish it into what they believe would be a franchise quarterback. And we're starting to see that talent seep into his game where, you know, he's not just trying to do those things every single play. He puts it in his arsenal. He puts it in his back pocket to take it out when he needs it. And it's really helping the Bills right now. I mean, it's just offense, though. I mean, you can tell now that Singletary, I think, is going to be that workhorse going forward. But at the same time, it doesn't really matter because they're running the ball pretty well right now behind that offensive line, where Frank Gore is still able to, you know, produce a good chunk of yardage. And, you know, now he's third all-time NFL leading rusher, or third all-time in the NFL rushing yards for a career, which is just
right.
Insane.
We got you. Yeah, yeah.
To pass Barry Sanders, like, what? But yeah, I mean, overall though, the Bills, I mean, 424 net yards on offense is fantastic. Yeah. And getting that from a team that's, you know, 2 years removed from drafting their franchise quarterback and what a lot of people thought would be a long-term project in development. And you're 8-3. Your quarterback is longest NFL active streak with 2+ touchdowns and keeping the, you know, turnovers in check. It's good. Yeah. I mean, rushing game too, having that as an added factor and going into a really tough game against Dallas is a good momentum and a good job taking care of business for them.
I love Bill's PR. I love how they just find, like, random stats. Like, Josh Allen has the longest streak of producing two plus touchdowns. And just,
it is a pretty crazy streak, though.
It is. It's good, but it's just, like,
record, too. Jim Kelly in 1991 had 7 straight games with producing 2 touchdowns or more. And, I mean, the fact that he's up there shows you how, I mean, the franchise quarterback situation since Jim Kelly has been pretty bad. But the fact that a guy, you know, so new still and so not really sought after is doing a fantastic job in proving people wrong, like proving people in the media wrong, proving people on the other team wrong. You know, you saw Chris Harris after the game say, well, I don't have any advice to give him anymore. He's changing the narrative.
Shut him up.
Yeah. He's controlling the narrative out there, which is much different than what we saw in the past. And if he can continue to play well, and now he has Thursday as a national stage to show people what he can do.
Boy.
And it's, yeah, exactly. It's a little like, well, will he show up? But, I mean, Dallas has a defense that has some injuries, and their offense has some injuries. And they're clearly going to be just, you know, trying to stick it with Ezekiel Elliott and try to take advantage of the Bills' rushing defense. But it's going to be a good game, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot closer than we were thinking maybe like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like if the Bills played the Cowboys when they played maybe like the Browns or something, or maybe even Washington, we all probably would have been saying like, oh, it's not even going to be close because the Bills' rushing defense can't really stop anyone. But you know, over the past couple of weeks, they've proved that they can. And, you know, holding Phillip Lindsay to, how many yards was it? Like, just a little over 50 is an impressive feat because he is a very talented young running back. And I think it's going to be a pretty close game. I think, you know, I think the Bills defense will do enough to hold Dak Prescott to be, you know, not too effective. They're going to try to do similar things like the Patriots did last night. And it's just going to be It's going to be a close one. It's going to be an ugly, grinded-out sort of game. But, yeah.
It's going to be like the Thanksgiving conversations.
Yeah.
See, I don't think that. I think the Bills have looked good the last few weeks. They're 8-3. But I really don't see a scenario where this game is close.
Well,
Thanksgiving and Dallas.
Cowboys haven't been a team with a winning record. Bills have a winning record, so you know what that means.
Yeah, but they've also played Green Bay, New England.
Bills also haven't beaten a team with a winning record, correct?
Right. No. So I just...
Both teams are going to get their winning record.
It's going to be a tie, actually.
One of them. Yeah.
I mean...
Sorry, not both.
Thanksgiving in Dallas with a frustrated Jerry Jones who's going to be, you know, really wanting a win on Thanksgiving. I really don't see a scenario where the Bills win this game, and I don't think it's going to be particularly close either. So that's just... That's just me. But the Bills, hey, they could still finish 10-6. We'll see. They could easily finish 8-8. But I think they'll still finish 10-6. I've been sticking by that record all year, and I'll stick by it now that we have what 5 games left. So, but I do want to talk about Josh Allen a little bit here, just because I really didn't go deep. Oh, I'm not going to say that. I didn't go into depth about Josh Allen. Look, I like Josh Allen. I think he's really improved as a passer. I think yesterday he did drop a few dimes. He was Danny Dimeson out there. I thought, you know, a lot of the throws to Cole Beasley, even just like the touchdown throw was good. That was a good play design. But just a few throws where Beasley was covered and he was using his arm strength and accuracy, buzzword with Josh Allen, to really fit the ball in the tight windows there. And then the John Brown throw. There were a lot of very good plays. Mm-hmm. But then also... I want to talk about the electric play that everyone was talking about for like 5 minutes after it happened, when he ran around the backfield for like, what, 5 or 6 seconds before turning upfield and going to get the first down?
At least 5 or 6 seconds.
Yeah. Nine times out of 10, a holding is called on that play. Because when you are asking five men, five offensive linemen, to and some receivers as well, to block a defender for 10 seconds, there's bound to be some holding there. So I really don't like it when, I mean, those plays are electric, but also you are just, you're making something out of nothing, but also odds are there's going to be a penalty on the play just because odds are someone's going to hold. There's holding on like almost every play. The refs just sometimes choose to call it, sometimes choose not to. Nobody really knows what holding is anymore. So I'm really surprised there wasn't a holding on that play. Perhaps the refs were just so enthralled by what Josh Allen was doing that they weren't looking. So because they probably easily could have found something to call holding on. So again, those plays, they're really fun to watch, but they're really dangerous because you're just giving the offensive line more time to hold someone, or you're giving the defender more time to look like someone's holding them. So that's, I don't know. I'd like to see fewer plays like that. Though I love seeing those plays, I'd like to see fewer of them just because most of the time those are going to get called back and they're not even going to count. So, yeah, but for the most part, I thought it was a good game from Josh. Good game from the whole team. So anything to add here before we get into Twitter questions from our diehard fans?
I think going back to that crazy play, I think it just shows the discipline too as well from the offensive line and knowing that Josh Allen likes to move around in the pocket and likes to make plays. And you saw on the replay too, I mean, it was like, I think it was Deion Dawkins made sure he wasn't holding there and just like stood as a pick, essentially blocking the guy. And it takes a lot of practice for those offensive linemen to know and have a feel for when Josh Allen might be leaving the pocket or might be trying to make some crazy moves. But I think you can credit that offensive line as well for that, for not, you know, getting a stupid penalty on a crazy good play like that.
McKenna, anything to add before we move on here?
Not about Josh Allen specifically. I think we covered a lot, but yeah, I think the offensive line has learned to, you know, stay disciplined with Josh Allen, because I feel like if a non-mobile quarterback, you'll see a lot more of holding calls against their offensive line if they sort of make a scramble like that. So I can see your point. Like, they're so much fun to watch because he's making guys miss, but and it's just a fun play to watch. But yeah, there is always the risk of Deion Dawkins just tackling a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, or Feliciano getting frustrated, whatever. you know, stuff happens. But Buffalo Bills win, whatever the score was, 20-3. A good game, a very good. It was a game they should have won, and it's a game they did win pretty handedly, despite what the Denver media tells you, that Bills are a fluke team. No way they'll beat the Broncos, and ooh, they probably regretted making the trip from Denver. But hey, Buffalo's nice this time of year. So there you have it. The Bills win. So we're moving on to the next segment, 57 minutes deep into the podcast here. Last week I debuted the Kyle's Question of the Week segment. Well, this week we're calling an audible. It's the People's Questions of the Week, where I tweet from my personal Twitter account, hey, send us some questions, my dudes, and the people send us some questions. So we have three this week.
We actually
have four. Like I said earlier.
My girlfriend sent me a text about a question, so.
Ooh.
Ooh, well, we'll get to that in a few moments here.
Another audible.
McKenna calling audibles. So here's our first question from Victoria Saley, former Bills Wire contributor, avid listener of the show. She asks, what are y'all... Ooh, nice voice crack. Sorry, going through puberty, boys. Going through puberty out here. What are y'all doing for Thanksgiving? Any particular traditions? Does the Bills game affect your plans this year? I would like to, first off, wish you guys and the show, or the listeners in general, a happy Thanksgiving. The show will go out on Tuesday. Thanksgiving is Thursday, so I wish everyone a very successful and healthy and whatever Thanksgiving. But more importantly, between now and Thanksgiving is Wednesday night, which is the biggest drinking night in the United States. So again, I'm sure you guys have plans. I'd like to wish you guys a very successful and healthy and safe night of drinking. Do you guys have plans for that Wednesday?
I do not. I typically work regardless if it's a holiday or not. I took a half day though, so I'll be working till noon, and then I'll be watching the football game, and then going over to friends for like a Friendsgiving type thing. So, living nice.
Friendsgiving, more like friends chilling.
Exactly.
Have you ever seen that vine? Oh, it's a great vine. Mm-hmm. It's just a really dumb vine, and then it's a bear with lettuce. That was his friend. It's
beautiful.
It's dumb. McKenna, any Wednesday plans or just Thanksgiving plans in general?
Well, Wednesday, I'll be home because, you know, I'm on my break from school starts Tuesday. So I get home Tuesday night, we'll be chilling. Wednesday, my sister and her fiance come back to the house for Thanksgiving. So yeah, we'll just hang out at my house and drink and chill and, you know, nothing too crazy. But yeah, it'll be a fun time. And then Thanksgiving, I don't know, we just like eat at my house, so we kind of just start cooking whenever and eat whenever. So it's not like a super stressful sort of day like it is, I know, at other people's homes.
Oh, yeah.
A very, very low key here at the Selegi household as well. We really don't have any Thanksgiving traditions, just turkey, pumpkin pie, the usual. But, I mean, this year, do my plans affect the Bills game? Yeah, because I'm probably going to be super hungover. I might not be waking up till 3 o'clock. So yeah, my plans, they will bleed over into Thanksgiving. Goodbar Karaoke, Mr. Goodbar. Ooh, boy, we're in for a good one. Any Kyle Selegi Variety Hour listeners?
We should tweet out the song recommendations.
Yeah, tweet me some song recommendations.
What song should Kyle sing?
Here's my plan, and it includes, you know, somebody who's actually sent in a question. My friend Travis, he and I, that's the current plan. He might bail on me. He has a history of doing that. But he doesn't listen. Who cares?
He bailed on that.
Yeah, he's bailed on this. But the current plan is to get very drunk and sing either the start of Something New from High School Musical and completely recreate the motions, because that would be hilarious. And then, or he said, what's the song with Kid Rock and Shania Twain? Something about a picture.
I believe
that
that's just
Shania
called
Twain?
Garbage.
Hey, that's rude. let me look up. Kid Rock, I'm on Spotify right now. I'm trying to find out what the name of the song is.
I hate that Kid Rock is still relevant.
Sheryl Crow. It's Kid Rock and Sheryl Crow, picture. It would be hilarious. So that, we're doing one of those, maybe. And then if you have any other song recommendations, Tweet them in for the pod. Yeah, we'll do karaoke next week. But that's my Thanksgiving this year, is hungover and then wake up and eat some turkey and some pumpkin pie.
Beautiful.
So, beautiful. Moving on. This one comes from friend of the show, Nick Fody, who's on the missing
friend
episode
of
the podcast. Friend of the pod. We did a whole episode, and then I had to delete the whole episode. So if any of you listeners have ever listened and been like, yo, where's this one episode? You go from, like, 12 to 14. I don't know what episode
it was.
Those
are the basement tapes.
Right.
You know, those will be released later on.
We have two lost files, but, yeah. yeah. So Nick Fody starred in one of our lost episodes, and he asks, any plans to become XFL superfans? Signed, DC Defenders season ticket holder. Yes, ooh. I do plan to become a DC Defenders season ticket holder fan. No, that would imply I was a fan of him. I do plan to become a DC Defenders fan, just because they do have a lot of former Bills. They have Tyree Jackson and Cardale Jones in their quarterback room. Just elite room there. And, yeah, Nick, you got two season tickets, and you said I can come whenever I want. So, yeah, I'll be there opening week and every subsequent week. So for you guys, any plans to become XFL fans?
Yeah, I mean, I think I might root for, you know, the Seattle Dragons out here.
Hell yeah.
I mean, they're coached by Jim Zorn. He's their GM as well, too, which is interesting. You know, he had a big stint in the NFL as a coach for a bit, too, with the Seahawks and Redskins as well, too. So, I don't know. Be interesting. I don't know who they have on their team, though. I haven't looked that far.
I don't think they have a very good team, if I remember correctly. I don't remember, though. McKenna, anything? Any XFL plans?
I'd rather do anything else than watch the XFL.
Jesus.
You know, they do actually... I will go back. They do actually have someone we might be interested in on the Seattle Dragons. Austin Prohl.
Really?
Former Buffalo Bills offseason practice squad member.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah, dude. Austin Prohl.
Big get for them, I'm sure.
Did the Bills draft him?
In the seventh round. Bina McDermott worked with his dad in Carolina, so they did him a favor.
They have Jason Marrow as well, too, former NFL tight end.
Just an elite group over there.
Elite squad. Maybe I am liking this. Yeah.
Maybe you are a closet Seattle Dragons fan.
Guys, I think
a lot of fun.
We'll have some Dragons Wire posts coming up.
Dragons Wire. McKenna, do you want to call your audible now? Podcast question.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So this is an actual football Bills question.
There we go.
So Sierra asked me, why do you think Bills fans are known as one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL? Which sort of ties in nicely to the conversation we were having earlier, which you had no idea about.
Because they like to you know?
Oh my god.
Beautiful.
I think that pretty much sums it up. Bills fans
That's
whatever.
I mean, it's true.
I'll need to get the bleep.
Yeah, I think you'll need to.
Yeah, I'll bleep that up. But that's a lot of fun. They've supported the team for years when they've sucked, and now that they're good, they're not even good now, but it's just like
they're decent.
Here's the thing. Bills fans hate themselves. They realize that they're in an abusive relationship and that whatever they do, it's not going to matter because the team's going to be disappointing. But they're just like, I'm along for the ride. I'll get drunk in the parking lot and I'll go in and I'll have a good time. So that's
a good way to put it. In a sad way.
In a sad way. That's
what
it is.
Very sad, accurate way.
But I do. Yeah, they're passionate. They've had nothing to support for what 20 years now, but they've stuck around. So now they've reached the they're past the point of denial, and they're just like, this is my life now. So, I think anything else to add there?
No, you summed it up really well, Kyle.
Yeah, I think you did. So much. But I think it sort of stems from when was the Sabres founded?
70.
So the Bills' first season was 1960. So I think it just stems from the fact that at that point there was, I don't think the Buffalo NBA team was there at that point anymore. It was still a true one sports city. They're like, hey, got nothing else to watch, and there used to be NFL teams in Buffalo. So I just think a lineage of fans having nothing to do and all being very sad and depressed because the 60s and 70s and 80s were bad times for Buffalo. So like, we need something.
Maybe that's it. It's just.
There's a lot going on in Buffalo.
And also, they like Labatt Blue. They like Zubaz.
Zubaz. You know what's funny, actually? After we had that conversation on the podcast, at work we have a very, professional channel called Swag or Nah, where someone will just post something in the channel, and they'll be like, is this swag, quote-unquote swag, or nah? And someone posted a pair of Zubaz pants, and I had to explain to them that Zubaz are considered holy in Buffalo, I'd say.
Oh, they are. They listen to the podcast. Your coworker listens to the podcast.
They must.
Heard our conversation.
That's the only reason, for sure.
Yeah, they were trying to start a conversation with you, Nick or Rich. Yeah. I almost just called you Nick because I'm thinking about Nick Wotan.
That's wow.
And how, yeah. There's some mental gymnastics to explain how I would be thinking about Nick Wotan, so I'm not going to get into that. But anyway. Final question of the week, unless we get something else here last second. This question comes from Travis McDonald, my friend of the show, who may or may not go drinking with me this week. He asks, I drank paintbrush water in the middle of the night, and I liked it. Playoffs? That is a very, very good question. As we talked about before the show, it's kind of like a Groundhog Day scenario. Like, had he not liked the paint water, that would mean no playoffs. Yeah. But because he liked the paint water, that means that the Bills are going to go 10-6 and make the playoffs. And, this is the type of thing I wouldn't put past Travis because, hold up, I just found an envelope on my desk. Sorry.
Nick.
It's from my student loan provider.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Anyway, sorry. I wouldn't put this past Travis because he's been working on a painting of Freddie Mercury for months. Again, it's very possible he was working on this at like 3 a.m., just got thirsty and took a sip of his paint water.
Yeah.
Like the other day, unrelated, but I was making tiramisu. Mwah, delicious.
Wow.
But to make tiramisu, you have to separate the yolk and the egg white. Mm-hmm. So I had this big pan of egg whites. And I was like, yo, I want to get gains. Protein boys, bodybuilders, drink this stuff, and they get gains. So I took a sip of the egg whites, and I regret it. I think I have salmonella poisoning. So this is, it's been a fun few days here at this Leggy household. Tiramisu is delicious, but also it hasn't stayed in my body for too long, if you feel me. Oh, we are getting into crazy talk here at the end of this podcast.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yeah, the paint water, I think that is a very good, strong indication that the Bills will go 10-6 and make the playoffs. So anything to add here before we get out of here, guys?
I think I see the connections between the paint water and the Bills making the playoffs, because you said he's painting a photo of Freddie Mercury, right? And Freddie Mercury was the lead singer of the band Queen, which also had a song, We Are the Champions. So I think it does mean that the Bills are going to the playoffs, Super Bowl winners.
Speaking of mental gymnastics, there you go. You got there.
I even
McKenna,
got a 10 from the East German judge.
McKenna, what do you think? Playoffs?
Yes, I think since he was not like painting like outside or anything, it's a very specific painting of Freddie Mercury that has a lot of good energy in it. So I think that's providing a lot of good energy towards the Bills and their playoff chances. And you know, Queen, royalty, Bills will become NFL royalty when they win the Super Bowl this season. So
beautiful.
Yes.
Good movie too about Freddie Mercury.
I haven't seen it.
Good film.
Oh, the Rami Malek one?
Yeah. Very well done.
Yeah, his
Except
painting,
I can't get over his teeth the whole time.
His painting looks more like Rami Malek than it does Freddie Mercury, and I've told him this, but, you know, he hasn't changed it. So, my dogs are barking. I think that's the cue to go here. Thanks for listening to this 70-minute podcast, some of which was about the Bills' 20-3 win over the Denver Broncos. Make sure to follow Bills Wire on Twitter, on Twitter. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Kyle Salegi. Make sure to follow Rich on Twitter at
By Rich Kowalski.
Make sure to follow McKenna on Twitter at
McKenna Middle.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week, assuming this week of partying goes to plan. So thank you guys for listening. Bye bye.